Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine. To quote today's special guest, Michael Grant White, breath and breathing affects every aspect of our existence. One cannot understand the breath without making a study of it. And to really know it, one must experience its feeling, sense directly, and preferably be guided by one who is familiar with the internal terrain of sensing and feeling, awareness, and optimal function. Like chocolate must be tasted to know what it is like, breathing must be felt moment to moment. Michael dedicates his work to those wanting to live life the fullest and more on their own terms, those with chronic health challenges, those who have been excessively medicated, those accused of faking illnesses but just knew something was wrong with their breathing. To all health professionals who want to ensure we all get and stay healthy, Michael Grant White, author of the 6 leading edge books, is known by a variety of names. He is called the Optimal Breathing Coach, the Breathing Guy, the Ultimate Breathing Guy, the Ultimate Breathing Coach, and a few more. I won't go on, but he's been around a long time doing this, and he's got a lot of names, and he's really revered in this field. So let me bring him on so we can get started. Good morning, Mike. Welcome.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Should I call you Michael or Mike?
Either one. Michael.
Okay.
Mike is shorter. Save time.
Okay. Then that's what we'll do. Okay.
Saves breath.
Yeah. Saves some breath, right. Tell us how you actually got into breathing and teaching others how to breathe. What prompted that?
Well, when I was 11 years old, I was chosen to sing a cappella for the school, my grade school. I was the only one chosen. And it was incredible. I loved it. And I got beat up a lot after that, and I lost the ability to sing. I got beaten up with a police strap beyond the point where I could scream anymore several times. And I lost the ability to sing. So 20 years later, in my 30s, I decided I wanted to relearn how to sing. And I had no clue about emotions, energy, breathing, nothing. I just wanted to learn how to sing. So I went to a singing teacher in San Francisco, and we had a couple of sessions, and she says, you know, you are really locked up, you know, and I had major body armoring all over, you know, and she says, you should do this therapy. So I said, okay, fine. And I did singing lessons, and I did a therapy session with Reiki and therapy, not Reiki, but Wilhelm Reich therapy for 156 consecutive sessions. And I still couldn't sing. So I went to Europe, spent 6 months in Europe in the 70s, and then came back and spent the next 20 years taking singing lessons and trying to get my singing voice back. And nothing worked. So along in the 90s, I came across a couple of people that were teaching breathing. And Carl Stau and Corella Speeds are the two people. And I started doing some of the things they suggested. And then it turns out that one of Corella's students, the only one that ever worked with her in a workshop situation, had moved to 50 miles away from me. So I started studying Carl's videos, and we started doing trades, and I'd go down and she'd show me what Corella was taught her, and I'd show her what I was learning from Carl, and we begin to see common denominators around what was going on with breathing. And about that time, my vibrato started to come back a little bit. And I says, oh my God, this is a revelation. It was like all those years, you know, and I finally began to get a sense that the real issue around singing was breathing. And so, you know, I figured, well, okay, I'm just the dummy. Nobody knows that. I don't know that. I mean, I'm the only one that knows that, you know, that doesn't know that. So I was in Walnut Creek, California, and a friend of mine said, who knew what I was doing with the breathing, said, they need you over here. I said, who's that? He says, well, there was a group called the Health Medicine Forum. And the Health Medicine Forum was headed by Len Saputo, who is still a dear friend. And they had a patient up in front of seven different modalities and interviewed for an hour in front of an audience. And then at the end of the interview, the audience would come up and have an open mic, and you could ask questions, make comments, whatever, right? So I attended this event, and there was a chiropractor, internist, oncologist, massage therapist, whatever, you know, was up there interviewing this patient. And so what I waited until the very end. I noticed nobody asked me anything about breathing. I could see there was a breathing pattern issue from 50 feet away. And so I mentioned it on the open mic, and there was just silence. Okay. I figured, well, these people got to know about breathing, you know, but nobody said anything. Okay, well, if I'm nothing else, I'm persistent. So the next week, same deal, different patient, different group of alternative and traditional medical, you know, professionals. And same deal. Nobody said anything about breathing. Well, I just couldn't believe this. So I kept coming back, and it took me 7 weeks. And finally, Len came up to me. He's a Duke internist, you know, a medical doctor, incredible man. He says, I think you're finally getting through to me. And, you know, and so, yeah, so what really struck me was he wanted to learn. You know, he was a traditional medical doctor, but his wife, who's a nurse, had been saved. Her life had been saved by alternative health, alternative medicine. So he was really big in this health medicine concept, you know, as opposed to sickness medicine concept, which is what most of the traditional medical models around is about sick people. You know, you want to learn how, you know, you want to learn about health. You study healthy people, not sick people. So, anyway, it really just drove it, you know, it convinced me that the medical world didn't know that much about breathing. What is healthy breathing? God bless them. They can keep somebody alive on a resuscitator, you know, or a ventilator while they're performing incredible surgeries. But in terms of what's healthy breathing, they didn't seem to have much of a clue. So about that time, I'm working on a fellow. He's a techie, and he says, you need a website. So I said, what's a website? 1997, you know. He says, gets me breathing.com. You know, we get breathing.com. And that became my focus. That became my life's purpose, was the breathing.com. You know, studying healthy breathing. So that's kind of how I got into it. That's a great story.
Then, you know, it's amazing how life takes you on these through these different doors to get you to where to what you are really here to do. And it sounds like you were just directed all the way. And it's amazing. Just to just for clarity, did you have psychological damage that manifested physically or physical damage to your throat? Were you directly hit in your throat?
Oh, no, it wasn't. Well, that's a good question, because there was a lot of tension in the throat. So I don't think there was physical damage. I mean, I could speak fine. You know,
okay.
I was locked up, and I didn't know how the feeling should be in breathing. I didn't have a sense of that. And when I begin to focus on when the common denominators that Carola and Carl begin to demonstrate with their writings and their videos, I begin to get a sense that it has to do with a natural breathing reflex, which is simply stated, it's when you breathe in passively and effortlessly, you know, when you breathe in passively and effortlessly, that's a natural reflex. Some people say, you know, take a deep breath. Well, that stimulates the sympathetic nervous system. That creates a sort of excitation. So what we want to do really is learn how to make that happen without stimulating the sympathetic nervous system, just to allow it to happen. Like if you're sleeping and all of a sudden you take a deep breath, you're asleep. Nobody said take a deep breath. You just do it, right?
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, that's the real key is how you begin to grease the wheels so that occurs, because most people are locked up. They're shallow breathers, and they don't breathe. They don't breathe very much, and then when they do breathe, they go into overstim. They go into states of anxiety.
Right. And so, I'm actually one of those people. My body seizes up, and I was a shallow breather. So I've been learning better techniques on how to breathe. And so I can see the difference. You know, I'm not hyperventilating, but I'm breathing deep. So can you give us some kind of idea of what we're doing wrong besides, you know, just basic shallow breathing? And some kind of idea of how we should be doing it differently.
Okay, I think the first thing, in other words, it's a challenge to tell somebody how to breathe, but I'm getting better at it. But I wrote a book and I edited it 50 times, and I finally one day I says, you know, you're not going to learn how to breathe reading about it. It's not going to happen, you know. So, but first, I had a billionaire call me to Singapore. When I explain part of it this way, and I'll explain it to you guys because I think you'll be able to get it verbally. Let's talk about the optimal breathing window. Okay, just think of the optimal breathing window. Okay, first I want you and everybody listening to this, take the biggest, nastiest in breath you can think of. Just go ahead and take a big, deep, uncomfortable, nasty in breath.
Mike.
Okay, and then exhale. Oh, then exhale. Okay, now call that a 10. It's not a good 10. Just call it a 10. Okay, now take in a big, deep breath, but it's still comfortable. Nice, big, deep breath, but comfortable. Okay, you call that an 8. Okay, and then exhale. Don't hold your breath, just exhale. Okay, now breathe in to the 8 and just exhale. Just let the breath go. You go to passive exhale. It's going to go down to the bottom of a passive effortless exhale. All right. And if you wanted to get any more out, you'd have to push it up. We're not going there. Okay. Just let it go down to the bottom. So just take a, just do it again. Take a big, deep breath, comfortable up to the eight. And then just let the breath go. The bottom of that exhale. We'll call that a three. All right. Now, breathe into the eight. Exhale to the three, and push it all out, 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 nothing left, okay, good, now just let it come in. Okay, now, the optimal breathing window is between eight and three.
Losing you.
The reason for that?
Okay.
Huh?
Go ahead. I keep losing you,
okay.
You keep like going in and out.
Say that again?
I've lost you for, like, brief periods, but that's okay. So you can continue. We're okay now.
Okay, well, no. So you breathe into an eight, and then you let go to the bottom of the passive exhale, and you call that a three. All right? Now you breathe into the eight, and you let go to the bottom of the passive exhale, and then you push the rest of the breath out. You push it out, 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 push it out. All right? Then you let the breath come in. When you get to the bottom of that part, you call that a zero. There's no breath left. That's a zero. So you've got 10, 8, 3, 0.
Okay.
So the optimal breathing window is between 3 and 8.
Okay.
And why that is because when you breathe above eight, and everybody's eight's a little different, we'll get to that in a minute, but when you breathe above eight, you create tension. Can you get that?
Right.
Huh?
Yes.
And,
absolutely.
Okay, good. So, and when you breathe below three, what happens? What do you create?
It's uncomfortable. I mean, you feel like you're, I mean, you don't want to be
okay.
out of air.
Keep it simple. You create tension.
Okay, tension.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable. But we're looking for keywords here to make it easier to understand. Okay?
Okay.
When you breathe above eight, you create tension. When you breathe below three, you create tension.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
So what happens is people shallow breathe. They may breathe into five. And then they may speak. When they speak, they might use up. They may go down to 4, 3, 2, 1, or 0, which means they spent quite a bit of time below three speaking, creating what? Tension.
Tension. Tension.
Okay. So you're creating. So what's going on is they create more and more and more tension. So you have some people that say, When I get tired reading out loud, I can't get up and speak before many people because I run out of breath. So what happens? So what we do is, basically, you think of your breathing as a billows, like a fireplace billows. Open, close, you know, blow air into the fire, make the fire hotter. You tracking
right.
me?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so so you think of your breathing as a billows. You want to make your billows bigger. If you open it an inch or two, you don't get much air into the fire, right? But if you spread it out over 6 inches or as wide as you can make it, and then you close it and you blow a lot of air and the fire gets hotter, right?
Right.
So think of your, you know, that's just an easy way to think of breathing, okay? That's a deep breath. You're getting so... So when people try to let's say they're normally at a five, and they try to take a deeper breath. Let's say their eight is my five, and they try to take a deeper breath. They're creating tension. So what we want to do is we want to make their five bigger to where it's really a six or seven and eight. So when they do take a big deep breath, there's no tension. You don't want tension when you're taking a deep breath. But the problem is stress levels invite creating tension when you take a deep breath because the whole system gets more tight, more tense, and then the volume begins to become restricted. So the optimal breathing window is kind of like a marker for how you can think of breathing, and you can make it so when you do breathe deeper, you don't go into tension. And that's what our techniques are all about. That's what the breathing kit's about. It's about really making the window bigger. And then we integrate diaphragm strength. So we have a diaphragm strengthener that was invented by a tuba player.
Oh, and, wow, okay.
Yeah, oompa, you know, yeah. Takes a lot of wind to pump one of those puppies.
Right, exactly. And our diaphragm supports our lungs and our breathing, so we really need to, you know, that has to be strengthened. I agree with you. you are the founder and director of the Optimal Breathing School, and you say that you combine key elements of eclectic spirituality, Tibetan, Hatha, and Kundalini yoga, plus several other modalities. How do these fit into breathing? Do they each have their kind of breathing, different kinds of breathing?
Well, they're basically insights as well. So, for instance, if you read Tartan Tulku, he's got a couple of books out called Gestures of Balance and Skillful Minds. He's a Tibetan Lama. You read his book, he breathes you. He never mentions breathing. There's a certain pace that that the in a book, and the way it's languaged, where you just all of a sudden you just your natural reflexes just occur, you know. So Kundalini is another issue. See, Kundalini is part of breathing. It's a breathing exercise, and it's a forced fast inhale breathifier. I did that for a while. That was great, you know, but it's not healthy breathing. It's a breathing exercise. It's pranayama. Pranayama is not healthy breathing. Pranayama is mostly for altered states of consciousness. And any guru, any heavy-duty guru, is going to tell you stay away from it unless you are with a major skilled teacher and you are at a particular point where you can handle it. It's a big deal. You start messing with your breathing, it's a big deal. So we also integrate classical voice training, martial arts insights, but soft style martial arts or karate even with a ki. You know, okay, what does that mean? Well, you don't do it too often. Well, you blow your voice. You know, so there's a lot of things. What we did was we just studied breathing, basically whatever seemed to fit. Whatever seemed to work got included in the system. And so I think probably the majority of insights, well, there was body work. Okay, what do you do if your body's so tight that you can't do these things? Well, then body work, massage there, but deep tissue, Rolfing, I forget his name right now, but there's a couple of really good teachers out there now that are doing some good myofascial work. So that really helps, you know. So, but then once you do the myofascial work and you release the armoring around, okay, then how do you use it from the inside out? So you got to develop breathing from the outside in and the inside out. So you get rid of the tensions around in the exterior of the body, and you also develop the internal coordination that Carl called it. Inside the body. And there's a feeling to that. There's a sound production to that. My breathing kit has several breathing exercises that have to do with sound, because sound is one of the major markers for whether your breathing is getting better or not. I mean, I can almost break windows with my voice, and I'm 78 years old.
That's amazing.
You know? You know, yeah, so you just, it's a process. You can't give somebody, who's gonna learn how to breathe? The person that does that is misleading people. They're misled or misleading, one or two. You know, It's a process. And you learn more. That's why we have 50 exercises in our breathing kit. You know, and I people say, how long is it going to take me to learn how to breathe? Well, I says, it depends. You know, you either come to me and you're a Stradivarius and all I need to do is tune you. But if you present with three pieces of wood and some glue, we have a lot of work to do.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, you know, and
right.
I said, you know, I had a 86-year-old race walker, champion race walker. He calls me up. In fact, he's in Maryland. He passed now. He's 10 years later. But he calls me up and he says, they say I have emphysema. And he's a race walker. He was 86 at the time. I says, well, come on down. We'll see about that. So he comes on down. And in 3 days, at the end of the third day, he says, you know something? He says, my lungs used to wear out before my legs. Now my legs wear out before my lungs.
That's amazing.
He went home the next day. He went home, and the next day, he broke 3 state records.
Truly amazing. What about, have you worked with anybody with COPD?
Absolutely, all the time.
Okay.
Absolutely. COPD and emphysema, you know, kissing cousins.
Or, right, you know, exactly.
Kissing cousins is a good analogy. But,
okay. Do you work?
The COPD,
do you work remotely?
Asthma.
You're in North Carolina, mm-hmm. So do you work remotely, or do people buy the kit and then do it on their own? How does that work?
Both. People get the kit. We can Skype after that sometimes. I'm working with a 23-year-old, highly functional, autistic young man. Now, this has been one of the most satisfying series of sessions I've ever had. He's following my instructions. He's doing what I ask him to do. He says it's working. Think about it. Highly, you know, 20 autistic, big time autistic, you know, but he's following instructions. He's a brilliant young man, as many autistic people are, you know, and he's following my instructions, and we're getting there. We're getting there, and I'm really excited about that. I had I had a woman come yesterday. She wants to be in the Secret Service. She's a cop. She wants to be in the Secret Service. So she flunked the physical. Well, she heard about me. She's local. She heard about me. She comes over, and she's got until December 4th to get her body back together, so where she passes that physical. And it is her life's dream to be in the Secret Service. And so she came in yesterday, really tense and talk a mile a minute and talk, you know, like, okay, I got to do that. She left. Oh, I feel much better. I feel much different. You know, I worked her with the breathing mechanics. I put her on the turbo oxygen system, you know, and then I put her in the massage chair hooked up to the oxygen.
Nice.
And when she, and I, you know, I says, I emailed her this morning. I says, how you feeling? She says, I was so relaxed, I didn't even go to the gym. I think I'm healing.
That's amazing. I have a question. When we are young, before we experience adversity, before our bodies lock up, do we breathe properly?
That depends. A lot of people, you know, they use the baby belly breath as an example. Well, babies don't develop their breathing until about 3 years old. So what kind of example is that, right? So usually kids lose their breathing by about age 10 or 11. That came from Gay Hendricks. He's one of my teachers. He's a world-class psychologist. And so I think that, you know, Restate your question.
Okay. So what I was saying is, before we experience adversity in our life and before our bodies tense up and lock up because of life issues, prior to that, are we breathing properly?
That's a good question. And basically, yeah, you pretty much, it depends on how many no's you've gotten growing up as an infant. For instance, you understand trauma That's, I think, one of your subjects is trauma.
Yes.
And so mine too, mine too. For instance, my mother caught my father terrorizing me with a vacuum cleaner when I was 2 years old. And she said, "What on earth are you doing?" He says, "I'm going to make a man out of him."
Oh, my gosh.
I just have to laugh. What, a vacuum cleaner salesman? What, you know, what is he, what in God's name was he thinking he was doing?
That's bizarre.
You know, so my, but so if you get through all that, the one of the issues really is you don't have to be traumatized to screw your breathing up. You can just be a normal kid, very active kid with a very attentive parent who says, "No, don't do that. Don't, then you don't want them to fall down the stairs or pull a pot of boiling water over their head or, you know," and they're just very active. They're climbing up the curtains, whatever, you know. So you're saying, "No, don't do that. No, go." And when you do that, you startle them. So you basically strengthen the startle reflex, and the startle reflex inhibits your breathing pattern.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, yeah, so here you go. You're growing up as a very normal, happy kid in a very loving family, but you're very active and you get told no a lot, and it has to be maybe in very high decibel levels, and it startles you. You know, you don't tell a
right.
child yes. You know, they maybe get 5,000 no's and a couple of hundred yeses.
Right.
You know.
Exactly. Yeah.
So,
and, you know, and
yes.
as I learn. Because I'm learning breathing, not your method, just a smaller, you know, shorter version of it. As I learn it, I realize how much startle response I have in my body. Because when I relax one area, another one tenses up. My body is seizing. It's afraid to let go. So I get that. I get that. And I had childhood emotional abuse. So, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
So did I, big time. You know, and so
yeah.
and my grand when I was seven, I came home from Sunday school on the wrong street. My grandmother went up to meet me, but she couldn't find me, and so I was home watching Hopalong Cassidy, happy as a clam. She walked in the door, saw me there, safe and sound. Went to the cupboard, came out with a razor strap, and worked me over with it for a long time.
Oh, that's
you
horrible.
Know, it's like she was worried. You know, she was just worried
right.
about it. So. But the good news about that, what followed that was the singing experience, because, and I mention this because anyone out there can benefit from this big time. So when I was, so I told you I could probably when I was 11, right? But my teacher, if there's ever going to be a saint for a teacher, it's going to be Thea Schweigert, you know, in Ulysses S. Grant grade school. She got us up and had us sing every day for 45 minutes, stand up and cheer songs, you know, God Bless America and Star Spangled Banner, and, you know, Battle Hymn of the Republic, whatever, just a big, you know, stand up and cheer, full voice songs, you know. And she was a big, heavy set woman. She'd whooping. She'd get us all, you know, singing. We did that every day. I ended up starring in the class play. I was Christopher Columbus. I sang a cappella for the school. I got almost straight A's, and I had an older woman for a girlfriend. She was 12.
Oh, what a life you had.
Yeah, and so, but then, unfortunately, I went to live with my dad, and he had this demerit system, and he, when I didn't take the trash out or forgot to feed the dog or, you know, I got 10 demerits. I got taken into the garage. I got bent over and whipped with a police belt beyond the point where I could scream anymore. And being a typical 12, you know, 13-year-old, I did that routinely, you know, and I got taken out in the garage routinely, you know. So it was pretty sad. He was going through some very hard times. He had a developmentally disabled child, not me, and he had a wife with Parkinson's that was, you know, at that point was terminal, and he had bad hearing and a bad foot, you know, and he was a cop, and so it was like, oh, it was a hard times for him.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
anyway,
in my opinion, there's no excuses. It's criminal behavior, as far as I'm concerned, to treat a child that way.
Well,
it's criminal.
I
you can't
I agree.
Do that to an
I
adult.
Agree, but...
Yeah.
I agree. There's a poem that ends up, and what he had done was done to him, and there's no one left to blame. You know, so we're dysfunctional. What's it? Bradshaw used to say, John Bradshaw is one of my heroes. He used to say, he quoted Virginia Satir. He said, Virginia Satir says that 95% of American families are dysfunctional. And John would say, I think she's optimistic.
That's great. Oh, my gosh. That's great. That's great. It's true. It really is true. It is true. But as far as, you know, listen, there can be dysfunction. But beatings and things like that, if you can't do it to an adult, then you shouldn't be allowed to do it to a child. And if it's criminal in one way, it's obviously criminal in the other. So that just sends me reeling.
That's what Alice Miller talked about when she talked about poisonous pedagogy. You know, it's like, you know, the children were chattels. They were just, you know, they were owned by the parents way back when,
mm-hmm.
you know. So we got a lot of bad,
right.
you know, bad examples from that.
Right.
You're right. It shouldn't happen. I mean, maybe it might be a little sting with a tiny little thing just to get their attention. Maybe, I don't know. You know.
A hand on the rear end one time. I'm not a believer in that. But when you're pulling out weapons, belts, you know, razor sharp straps. I mean, things like that. Come on.
Yeah.
Children have no way to defend themselves.
Yeah, I spanked my son one time. And that was it, you know, that's just caught his attention, you know, and at that point you could see I was, you know, don't mess with me. That was it. I didn't whang, bang, bang, just give him a couple of whacks.
Right.
And,
I did it with the levels of my voice. That's how my children knew
mm-hmm.
they better step into line. So anyway, as we're coming sort of nearing the end of it, I wanted you to talk a little bit about your institute and, you know, what you do there and how we can connect with you.
Okay. Well, we're basically dealing with two things. We're dealing with breathing mechanics and we're dealing with massive amounts of oxygen supplementation. And you can put them separately or together. We get the breathing kit that's online. You can get it in a physical version. You can also get it in a digital version, both. It has some tools in it. It has the diaphragm strengthener I mentioned. It has a 12-foot-long strap where you wrap it around your chest. You tighten it, breathe in. It opens up your rib cages in minutes. We have a turbo oxygen system where you take massive amounts of oxygen while you're exercising. This is amazing. I can't tell you express how intense this is. But if you have if you're a sick person with a nose cannula, you get about 1 liter of breath a minute, right? When you use our system, you can get up to 150 liters a minute.
Now the oxygen, would be something that doesn't come in the kit, obviously. I mean,
no, not at all. It's totally separate. It's on the website,
okay.
It's on breathing.com website. It says oxygen and exercise. You just click on that link and it's a drop down and it breaks, you know, exposes all of it there.
Okay, great. So would we, if we wanted to learn that, would we go out and get an oxygen tank for ourselves, or do we have to be with you
We sell them here. We also have free financing available. We sell them up on the site. If you have your own machine, you can get a reservoir bag. It's a three-part system. It's a machine, a reservoir bag, and a special mask that ties into the reservoir bag to give you the sense that you're breathing in a room full of oxygen.
Amazing.
Yeah, we have patents pending on it. It's really cool.
What is your tell us what your website is.
Breathing.com.
Oh, well, that's not hard. That is not hard. So is there anything that you wanted to share with us that maybe I haven't covered yet? You know, anything that you think is important for us to know about proper breathing?
Okay. go to the website and take the breathing test. It's a free test. And it takes about 15, 20 minutes. There are skills related to healthy breathing. And so what we learned with 85,000 test takers, we've had 85,000 people take those tests, right? And we pulled stats on it. And basically, there's four skills in the beginning of the test. How high a number can you count up to on one breath, quietly, cleanly, clearly? What's your breath rate, right? Skills like that. And so the people that had very good scores on those skills recorded very few diagnosed illnesses, if any. And the people that had very poor scores scored a lot of diagnosed illnesses.
That is just
simple.
It's truly amazing.
We're the only ones that have done that. I mean, I've been breathing.com for 22 years. I'm the only one in the world that's done that.
That's so amazing. I'm so grateful to have you with us today and, you know, sharing this information. I think it's extremely valuable. And, you know, I've had guests on that teach about, you know, going into meditation through breathing. And it's a very easy process to do that. So the breath is so much more important to us than we realize. I mean, we know we have to breathe, but breathing properly is the most important thing, right?
One of our courses is around people that can't meditate, or they want to meditate better, because that's one of the courses, because obviously breathing is the foundation of meditation.
Right. Right. Sounds good. Well, thank you. This has been amazing. I love what you're sharing with us. And it really does speak to most of my audience, because most of it is trauma-based. Most people who listen to me are listening because they've had trauma in their life and are looking for ways to alleviate the, you know, pain and suffering. So this is perfect for us.
One of my mantras, by the way, there's a key word on breathing.com called traflexive, which means to me, I created it. It's called traumatized breathing reflex. Traflexive, T-R-A-U-F-L-E-X-I-V-E, traflexive. So that might be of interest to some of your listeners, you know.
Okay.
But one of my mantras is any negative emotion you can breathe through long enough and properly will lose its grip on you. That could be a tall order for some people. You know, and as you say, then some of them don't even know they're traumatized.
Exactly.
You know? They're just,
exactly.
They're manipulated into massive submission.
Right. Exactly.
So, anyway, I think the best place to start is take the breathing tests, take a look at the oxygen and exercise, you know, see if you want to exponentially crank up your energy, you know, and get well or get stronger faster. So between the breathing mechanics and the oxygen, I'm where the buck stops.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for doing what you do. I mean, it's amazing what you've discovered and how many people you've helped. So I'm honored to have you with us today. Thank you.
So glad you're doing what you're doing. Just keep breathing.
I plan to breathe as long as I'm alive.
there you go.
All right, Mike. Take care. Thank you so much.
And my pleasure. Thank you so much.
So we are out of time today. If you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.